Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
Did I tell you that I believe your outfit is very 50s inspired today?
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I didn't think that, but I appreciate it.
I don't know that you've ever worn this combination before.
I have. When I first got this outfit, I wore it. I know this because our director told us that she bought the same shirt for her daughter. Because I have the same pants as her daughter.
Because you guys are wardrobe twins.
Yeah, we go to the Gap.
Is it the Gap or is it...
It's Old Navy. Why did I say that?
Yeah.
Sponsor
us.
Wait
a minute.
Just kidding.
Come on the podcast.
Yeah, come on the podcast, Old Navy. Give me your pixie cut pants.
Nice.
That's what they are.
Pixie cut pants.
Yeah.
You recommend them for everybody?
Oh my gosh, yeah. They're cute. They're cozy. They're stretchy.
Okay.
They're my cup of pant. My cuff of pant?
Your cuff of pants. Nice. Nice.
That's how I roll.
Welcome to Podcast for Good. This is Season 3, Episode 41. Today we are talking about children and animals. Two things we've talked about before, but we're talking about them together. I am Heather Lucas. I'm the Fiscal and Policy Coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive, and I am joined today by...
Jerrica Ferguson. I am with the Washington State Combined Fund Drive as the Marketing and Development Coordinator.
I like that neither of us got our titles right. I like that. Also, I paused before saying my name because you made a face and I was like, what is she looking at?
I didn't know I made a face. I was looking at the question of the podcast and I am going to have some questions.
Oh, I bet you are. Yeah. I don't know why I said that. Today, like I said, we're talking children and animals. We talked to an organization, Canines for Disabled Kids. We spoke with Mallory Anderson. She's the fundraising coordinator for that organization. But, you know, much like a small charity, she does everything.
Yeah.
How are you? Are you familiar with the concept of doing
everything? What title is my title this week?
Yes. Or this minute.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're a podcast co-host right now.
I am.
Look at you.
I am.
Yeah.
I don't mind it, though. I like being able to talk with all the different charities, and I just... It's cool. You get to experience something that you wouldn't know otherwise.
Yeah, I know. It's like I get to do a little research on a topic that I wouldn't do research on in my general life.
Right. And I think what's cool too is like going into the interview, I had an idea of what this organization was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the moment she started speaking, I was like, this is a completely different organization than what I thought.
Yeah.
So it's always unique because like, what you read online, can give you sometimes a different vision of what they're actually communicating to you. And that's why it's like a beautiful thing of hearing from them in person.
Yeah. Or like they'll say, well, this is what we do, but we also do this. And that's not something that's quite clear or conveyed well.
Yeah.
Unless you get one-on-one with somebody and you're like, oh, that's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to get right into that question of the podcast that you are probably going to have questions about.
Yeah.
Because we're talking animals and children.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, like, as a child, if you could have had, you know, a job. Like, you know, sometimes people have paper routes. Sometimes kids, like, mow the lawn for all the neighbors. Or if they dog walk, right? So if you could have had, as a child, any kind of animal walking business.
Yeah.
What kind of animals would you have chosen to be the ones that you walk?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that. But the reason I was confused is all I saw was animal walking service. And I was like, don't understand
what an animal walking
what that
service
means.
Is. Did you picture something in your head, like animal walking?
Well, I was
like
what
crossing?
Does she mean? Like, am I walking? Am I the animal? Like, it was very confusing.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to walk people, you're fine. I don't. That's an answer. That's a legit answer. Nope. Even T-Rexes, like, nope. I thought about that.
No, nope. I would like to walk very large cats.
Okay, like Maine Coon cats or
no,
like cheetahs?
I'm talking like, I want panthers? Like cheetah, a panther, okay. like all of them, just because I think it'd be pretty awesome to like have them. They're really like, don't need to be on the leash,
yeah,
but
yeah.
like we're in a pack.
Yeah.
Not like wolves pack. I want, like, I feel like big cat pack would be kind of cool.
Nice. Yeah. You would be such a badass
right?
if you walked down the street with a panther on a leash.
Wouldn't that be cool? I don't even need it on
a
leash.
A lion, you're just like, sup.
Like, I just want, like, my, like, no big deal. I just feel like it, like, because, you know, they would definitely come up to, like, my hip.
Oh,
or
yeah.
if not taller. Mm-hmm. And so it'd just be cool because, like, I could, like, rest my arms.
Yeah.
We could just, like, sit. No one would talk to me.
that's why you're like, I really would like people to stop talking to
no
me.
No one would
I'm
come
walking.
Up to me on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Or maybe people would come up and be like, can I
but then I would
cat?
Just I'd be like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I feel like there better not be a cat call or I'd stick them.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nala doesn't like that.
Yeah.
Whack.
Get him. Get him, Scar.
Yeah, right? Scar. I love Scar. I don't care. I love the villains.
I know you do. Yeah. So what about you?
Well,
who do you want to animal walk?
People.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if you said that.
Yeah. That's why I kind of said it. I think it'd be fun to have some kind of reptilian thing, like Gila monsters or like iguanas.
Yeah.
I would say sloth would be awesome, but you're not walking very fast.
I don't think you're going anywhere.
No, you're really
they
not.
Might just be on you.
They might be, hey.
You would become that person that ends up just like walking their animal, you know what I mean? Like where you just see people all of a sudden pick up their dog.
Yeah.
Because like the dog's not moving fast enough.
Yeah.
And I'm always like... Should have gone the walk then.
Yeah. Pandas are like that too. Where like you could walk a panda, but a panda would probably be like,
man, I'm gonna sit.
A crazy manic child. Like have you ever noticed every photographs of little pandas look just like chaos? Like they're all over the place. Yeah. They're climbing up people. They're like pulling on things or pushing things over. Like enclosed pandas trying to like when they breed them, they're trying to get them back the populations up, but they all look like they're just like having the best time.
Oh, that's cute. I haven't seen that. I actually just recently saw a viral vid of...
Never say that again.
A viral video of this, like, bear, I guess, in some, like... it was, like, a forest fire in a European country. And the little, like, cub bear was, like, trying to, like, hug or climb up on this, like, big fireman that saved the bear's life.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. I've said this on the podcast many times before. That I'd love to have, like, a pet bear. I know it's wrong to, like, try and domesticate wild animals.
Sure.
I'm highly aware of that. However, it's just, like, super cute that the bear was, like, trying to play because it was, like, trying to, like, wrestle.
Yeah.
But it was, like, tiny. It was a cub. And it was, like, I don't know, it was just pretty cute.
Nice.
Yeah. And I was, like, how often would you get to be able to, like, play with a bear and not be attacked?
Play with a bear and the bear knows, it's playtime, not mauling
time. I'm not
going to
eat your face time.
I'm not going to rip your face off with my claws.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nice.
So
on that note, we're going to kick it right over to the interview with Mallory Anderson, the fundraising coordinator for Canines for Disabled Kids. Here's that interview. Okay, we're here with Mallory Anderson. She is the fundraising coordinator for Canines for Disabled Kids. Mallory, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So can you give us a little history about Canines for Disabled Kids and what your organization does for the community?
Absolutely. Canines for Disabled Kids is an education and advocacy organization that was created to raise awareness about service dogs in total for anyone. So anyone who's interested in learning more about service dogs and whether or not they may be a good tool for them, for a family member, for a friend, for someone they know, they're absolutely welcome to give us a call, and we're happy to counsel them, essentially, and talk about what the dogs do, how the dog works, what they can't do, what it's like to live with a service dog, and give them all the information about the tool so that they can make an educated decision about whether or not this tool is the right choice for them. At that point, we can help them find an organization that would best be able to train a dog to suit their needs. There are about 150 organizations throughout the country that do train service dogs. But it's like going to college. They all have pros and cons. They all do different things. They all have different requirements. So we're able to help narrow down that list to organizations that they actually qualify for. Okay. So that they can have, instead of 150, they have 10 or 15 or 5. Wow. We help them with the application process. And then once they've been placed with a dog and they have their team together, if they ever have any problems while out using their service dog, we're happy to come out and help educate and help remediate those issues to solve the problems for everybody.
Right on. Yeah. And then what areas do you serve for your organization specifically?
We're nationwide.
Okay.
So we serve everybody as well as Canada. So we do a couple international things. And then we also have a fundraising side where we specifically provide scholarships to offset the cost of service dogs for kids 18 and under.
Okay.
So we provide these scholarships to children who are receiving their service dogs from organizations that meet our guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do education for the greater community. So we go to civic groups, schools, businesses, really anyone who's interested in learning about service dogs, and we'll come in and talk to them about how the dogs work, what the laws are that govern them, what the dogs should be doing, how do you identify a service dog in your community, things of that nature, to try to make it clear for everybody.
Okay, very nice.
Well, how do you guys help assist placement of these children to these organizations? When you have that 150 and you have to narrow it down to 10, what is something that, you know, you want to make sure that obviously they're in the same local area, I'm mm-hmm. sure, and all those things. But what are those, like, first kind of key indicators that you can do to help narrow it down?
So service dogs are a really fantastic tool for the right people. But like any tool, it's not the right tool for everybody. Mm-hmm. So we really try to talk to the families and the interested parties about what it's like to have a dog and what the dogs are actually capable of doing versus what the dogs cannot do, how they are not going to be able to assist you. And we also try to talk about what it's like to have a dog in public with you all the time, which it's a lot of work. It's
sure.
It's a lot more to coordinate. It's a lot more to think about. It's a lot more to have to worry about when you're out doing something. It's essentially you have another 2-year-old who you have to get all their stuff and have them ready to go and get out the door. So we try to make sure that everybody knows what they're getting when they're going to get a service dog tool and whether or not that's what they're looking for. For some people, it's that they decide that, you know what, I'm not old enough. We've certainly had kids who said, I think that this will be great for me, but I don't think I'm ready for that kind of responsibility for right now. So I'd rather wait till I'm older. We've had people who said that, you know what, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, and I think that this isn't the right choice for me, so I'm going to go look further for something else that'll be able to mitigate my disability. And then we have people who are like, absolutely, this is exactly what we want. This is going to be amazing. Thank you so much. I didn't even know that the dogs could do that.
Yeah.
And that's certainly something that we touch on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason that we spend so much time educating the public is in hopes that that information is going to spread throughout the community so that people will say, there are dogs that can do something about that, that they can help you with this. And people go, oh my God, I had no idea that dogs were out there doing something like this. And then they're able to contact us and say, I didn't even know this was an option for me. Tell me more about it.
Sure.
And we get a lot of that. We do have a lot of people who call and say, this is what's going on. Is this something a dog can even assist us with?
Yeah.
We had one client who she has a disease called mastocytosis. And they weren't training dogs to assist with that when she called. But her parents said, you know, we feel like this is something that there's a possibility that dog would be able to help her with. She is able to sense an oncoming episode, and we're wondering if there's something happening that the dog would also be able to sense and alert us to.
Yeah.
And we ended up connecting her to an organization who did decide to attempt to train a dog for her, and that dog was successful and is able to alert to her oncoming episodes, which allowed her to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
The dog is so sensitive to it that she was actually went into surgery, and the surgeons invited the dog into the surgical suite with her during her surgery because they felt that the dog was a better predictor of the oncoming episodes than any of their tools.
Wow.
That's incredible.
That is
incredible. Dogs are incredible. Dogs are incredible. And people are finding new things for the dogs to do all the time. It's a currently evolving industry.
Yeah.
People are discovering new things. Biodetection dogs, which would be dogs that are using their, well, we think it's their sense of smell.
Yeah.
To detect things that are happening within our bodies is certainly something that's really been blowing up in the last 10 years. So now there are diabetic alert dogs, and there are seizure alert dogs, and there are cancer detection dogs and Parkinson detection dogs. And people are just discovering all of these different things that the dogs are able to do. In Canada, there's a dog that is used to detect C. diff in the hospitals and to allow them to sanitize our hospitals better to help decrease the rate of infection of C. diff within the hospitals.
That's incredible.
Yeah, wow. They're detecting bacteria.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
I just don't even understand. Like, the ability that dogs have to be able to, whether it's smell or something mm-hmm. else that detects them, is just incredible that we have that ability being able to have an animal be able to do that.
The partnership. Right? Yeah, the partnership that we can create with them to be able to use this to help mitigate people with disabilities. It's amazing. It's just a really wonderful tool that people are able to use.
Yeah, totally. Well, then, like, what kinds of misconceptions have you heard about anybody who's had to, like, work with a service animal, a dog, when it comes to children with disabilities? Like, are there misconceptions out there for these children or people who need service dogs?
Again, it's more about whether or not it's people finding out that there are dogs that can assist them or assist their children.
Uh-huh.
The most common service dogs are dogs that are working with people in wheelchairs or people who are blind. And for a lot of people, that's what they think of, and they don't even know that there are other dogs out there who might be able to assist with something else.
Bio dogs, yeah.
Yeah.
Bio dogs.
Yeah.
I feel like that should be like a new sticker or something. Right? Like, get your bio dog.
Yeah. So that's definitely one of the places, is just discovering that these dogs are able to assist them with these things. And it's also figuring out there are different ways for service dogs to assist children. So 4, 5, 6-year-olds are just not able to independently handle a dog on their own. They are not capable of taking that level of responsibility of keeping the dog safe from the public and the public safe from the dog at all times. And so most of those children are actually facilitated, which means that there is a third party, often a parent or a grandparent, who agrees to learn how to handle the dog as well. And so the dog is in public whenever that third party is there to sort of help them. We refer to it as having your permit versus your license. You're not ready to have drive the car by yourself, and you have an adult driver there to take responsibility.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. So there are a lot of times that there are people who are using these service dogs in that way, but people aren't even aware that that's an option for them. And so we see a lot of that. We also see that people sometimes reach out to organizations that they don't qualify for, and they don't know it, and so they get rejected and don't understand why, and so they think that they're not good candidates, and it's not that you weren't a good candidate, it's that you weren't the right fit for that place.
So they stop.
Okay. And so we've had people who stopped for a number of years and then reached out to us or found us via one of the connections and said, oh, I didn't get accepted, and we're like, that's because they don't even train that. It's because they didn't train that type of dog. It wasn't because you were a bad candidate. It's because they didn't take kids, or they don't do that type of service dog, or there was something else about it.
Yeah.
These are all not all, but for the most part, these are nonprofit organizations. Yeah. They don't have enough people on staff to really give you a long explanation about why they're not accepting you. So for the most part, they say, sorry, we can't help you, and they move on.
Yeah.
But again, that leaves people, if they don't understand why they have not been accepted, they think that, well, this won't work for me, and often that's not the case.
Something's wrong
with me here. And so we try to help with that, to help them understand that, no, there are places. Here, call these people. These people would love to help you.
Could you actually kind of go into an experience that you've either witnessed yourself or that your organization has helped have a successful, or may not, but experience? Could you tell kind of actually a story of a specific individual?
Absolutely. I mean, at this point, we've had so many different families who have received service dogs. One of my favorite stories is we actually did receive a phone call from one of our past clients, and he was crying, and we were oh no, I mean, what's wrong? Is everything okay? Did something happen? And he was like, no, I was actually able to use the shower for the first time by myself today. And I'm so I'm so grateful that I was given this opportunity. And this is a 16-year-old boy who'd always needed assistance. He was in a wheelchair, and he needed assistance getting in and out of the shower, and if he forgot something, someone had to get it for him. And he received a service dog, and his service dog was able to help him transition from the chair into the shower and back. She could retrieve a towel or soap or anything else she needed, and he was able to do it completely independently.
Nice.
Wow, that's incredible.
And for him, it was just this level of independence had just not been on the radar for him before, and all of a sudden, here is this thing that he can just do, and he doesn't need mom anymore.
Right.
He can just do it by himself.
Yeah.
And it was just such an amazing experience for him to be able to take that leap.
Yeah.
And that's what we find with a lot of kids. One of the reasons that Canines for Disabled Kids specifically was created was because at the time that we were developed, a lot of organizations were not servicing children.
Okay.
it's difficult to work with kids. It's a whole another added layer of difficulty. And so a lot of people were just saying, call us when you're 18 and we'll help you then. And we felt that these service animals are able to assist children in increasing their independence and increasing their maturity on a very similar level to their peers because they have the dogs. And that denying them these tools until they were adults was really setting them back. And we felt that the industry really needed to start servicing this group. Yeah. And so we decided, partially with our scholarships, one of the best ways to influence an industry is to say, here's some money, do it this way. and so we really were pushing for places to start accepting children and working with them. We did have one client who... her mother called us when she was looking to get a dog and said, you know, I'm losing my daughter. She doesn't talk very much anymore. She's really become very introverted, and I don't know what else to do. So she applied for a service dog. She got her service dog 6 months later, and she went from being very quiet, sitting in the back of the room, not really communicating and talking to many people, to she joined band. She went on a Disney trip with her high school all by herself. She went off to college and lived in a dorm completely on her own. People weren't talking to her. They were talking to her aide and asking her aide questions. And so she was fading into the background. And once she got the service dog, people talked to her. People asked her questions. People communicated with her directly, and she bloomed from it. Again, she developed such a fast level of independence. She got her license, and she was just prepared to take on the world. She didn't need anything else now. Now she had her dog to help her with the things that she couldn't do on her own, and she was ready to go.
That's incredible.
And that's what we see a lot.
I would say, too, like, when you see somebody with a service dog, you're like, oh, a dog! Even though, you know, like, you're not supposed to touch it, it's a working dog kind of a thing, but, like, it's something that makes barriers non-existent.
It's certainly an icebreaker.
And I think that's, like, what's so incredible that I'm learning from your organization is that you have the ability of helping so many kids in so many facets of whether, and, like, being able to kind of touch in each of those areas, whether it's a physical disability or not, these dogs can really make a difference.
Psychiatric disabilities are another one of the really big places that there are many more organizations that are training dogs to assist with psychiatric disabilities. We're seeing a lot of dogs going out to assist with that level and help people through that. And again, we're seeing a lot of families with children who are obtaining dogs like this to assist their children with those types of things. And it's been a really huge development for a lot of people. It's really changed their lives, and we see a lot of that. And it's one of the really interesting things about the industry is watching it grow this way and seeing all these different things that the dogs are able to do and seeing people discovering this as you go forward every year. It seems like somebody's like, oh, we're training dogs to do this now, and it's amazing. But it started with veterans. People were doing PTSD dogs, and then they realized that they could transfer that to civilian life and that there are people who could use those same things going forward with that. And so we've just really seen so much growth and so much change and that kind of stuff. But again, it's very difficult for the populations to be aware of what's going on. And so we became a resource for people to contact and say, we have no skin in the game. We do not train service dogs. We do not place service dogs specifically. And so for us, it's not about whether or not you get the tool. It's about making sure that you get the right tool for you. And making sure that you're really educated on whether or not this is the right tool so that you can make an educated choice about it.
So with education and, like, the growth of the industry, I mean, you get legalities, right? So there are obviously questions people can legally ask someone who has a service animal. Do you have any kind of training or a place where you refer people or, like, children, their parents, when it comes to, like, what are your legal aspects of owning a service dog? And what are your rights when you go out into the world with your service dog? Do you have...
I mean, that's one of the things that we do try to assist people with is making sure that people are educated in what the two questions are and that they, you know, these are the questions that you have to answer and this is how it works and you should know the answers to those questions before you go out into public so that you can help to educate people. We spend a lot of time helping people understand that there is no legal certification currently in the country. They cannot ask you to see your certificates. They cannot ask you for your registration. Those things do not exist in the United States. And so there's nothing like that, but you should be able to answer those two questions appropriately with actual tasks. The service dog, in order to be a legal service dog, the dog does need to have one trained task that mitigates your disability.
And is that one of the questions? Like, for our listeners, what are the two questions?
One, is the dog a service animal required because of a disability?
Okay.
And two, what work or task has the dog been trained to perform?
And then beyond that, a person can say, you can't ask me any more questions.
That's it. Yep. That's interesting. HIPAA requires that you do have privacy about your disabilities and stuff, but they are allowed to ask, and you do need to answer those questions. And it needs to be a specific task. It can't be, the dog makes me feel comfortable. Yeah. That is not a trained skill.
Yeah.
But saying that the dog retrieves an items for me is absolutely a trained skill.
Okay. Yeah.
But saying that the dog makes me feel comfortable, that isn't a trained behavior. It needs to be something that you could show was a trained skill that the dog does.
They don't have to demonstrate it. They just
do not
have to say.
But it's sort of, that's the way to think about it. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's no, they do not need to demonstrate.
And then you would know that those are the two questions that they're able to ask.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So how do you keep up with all this new information and new dogs coming out with, you know, these, like, how is that possible that you guys, you were talking about earlier, you know, a team of four, how do you know what's going on? Do you work with these nonprofits or organizations? Do they give you that information? Are you just like constantly calling people up or doing tons of research? Like, how do you?
We do a lot of research. We spend a lot of time trying to keep on the edge as far as following groups or going to expos or going to consortiums that are talking about these kinds of things. And we also have relationships with a lot of these programs at this point. We've formed partnerships with these people. A lot of the programs will actually refer people to us if they are unable to assist them. They say, you know, go call CDK. They'll help you find the right place to work with you.
Yeah.
And so they kind of keep us abreast of what they are up to as well, which allows us to know what's happening. It also allows us to have, we have a document in our office that kind of tracks all the information of who do these people accept. So some places have locational requirements. We only train within this mile radius.
Okay.
Some places have age requirements. Some people have types of dogs that they will offer to people. And so we have a spreadsheet with all that information. So when people contact me and say, you know, my child is this age, we live here, and this is what we're looking for, I can look it up and say, okay, these organizations will accept you based on all this information.
Nice. Nice.
So call them.
Yeah.
So you have like a database.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really great. Thank you.
No problem. So what do you think is the most important thing for a parent to know before they partner their child with a service dog?
I think it's really important that they have reasonable expectations about what the dogs are going to be able to do.
Okay.
Service dogs are really amazing. But they're amazing dogs.
Yeah.
And we do try to explain
it's
to people.
Still a dog.
Yeah, they're dogs, which means that what they're doing is awesome. But a service dog that is performing 80% of the time doing what they're supposed to be doing. So, for instance, if a seizure alert dog is alerting you to your seizures 80% of the time, that is a successful dog.
Yeah.
But it's not 100%.
Sure.
They're dogs. They're going to have, they're like everything else. They're living creatures that things happen sometimes. Yeah. And so we do try to make sure that people are aware that this is what they're getting. It's a living creature that may make a mistake sometimes and may not. And so while it's going to be a really fantastic tool, it is going to be really helpful for you. It's not a computer. You can't expect it to be
on
like
all the
it's
time.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Same with us. And let's be honest about computers, right? Like we have plenty. Like none of us are always 100% at work.
You can, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And none of us know that our computers are 100% working all the time.
Yeah.
Even phones don't even work 100% of the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a really good point. So, all right. Let's say someone hears this podcast and wants to begin giving to Canines for Disabled Kids. Can you talk about what a donation does for your organization?
When you give us a donation, there are a couple different places that the money can go.
Mm-hmm.
It can go toward our education and programs, which means that it's helping us to travel around the country and go and educate people who are interested in learning about service dogs. So again, we're going into schools, we're going into civic groups, we're going into businesses who are wanting to know more about the service dogs, and we're helping to educate all those people about what the dogs do, how the dogs work, what the laws are that govern them.
Yeah.
We do all of this at no cost to the people who are inviting us to come. So we're a no-fee-for-service organization. No one is ever paying us for our services. Everything is supported by donations. The money can also go toward our scholarship fund, which is specifically toward money that is going to kids 18 and under who are receiving service dogs from one of the organizations that fits our moral and ethical guidelines.
Uh-huh.
We put out those scholarships twice a year. They go out in June and January. And essentially, we offer as many scholarships as we possibly can.
Yeah.
So as many people as we can give money to, we give money to. And again, those scholarships are for children throughout the United States as well as Canada. And we would work with other international organizations as they come our way. Canada's actually become big this year, but, you know, we're open to whoever is getting a working service dog. We want to help support it as much as we can for kids 18 and under. Where the money is going to allowing us to counsel these families. So it's allowing us to spend, you know, a couple hours on the phone with the family when they call and answer their questions and talk about what it looks like and talk about getting the dogs in school and talk about taking the dogs to work and what all that looks like. So it allows us to offer those services to anybody who's interested in getting a service dog. We do provide the information portion to anyone interested. It does not need to be for a kid 18 and under.
Nice. So before we go, do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight? I mean, you did talk about scholarship fund, but is there anything else out there that you'd like to highlight?
I mean, our big event that's coming up is in Massachusetts, so I feel like it's silly to talk about
on
here.
We might have people listening. We have people all around the world that listen to this podcast.
Oh, okay, great. All right, well, then let me do it. Sure, okay.
Go for it.
Sorry, I was just like, wait, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this. We actually will be having an event coming up in August in Worcester, Massachusetts, called Over the Edge.
Okay.
So people can raise $1,000, they fundraise for it, and in return for that $1,000 donation, they will be able to rappel off a building in the center of Worcester.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's going to be really awesome. We're super excited.
Oh, that's fun.
And we'll be able to offer that to anybody who's interested. We can support people with disabilities as well to go over the edge.
Nice.
We're really excited and hoping that it's going to be really, really great. That's I'm excited to jump over the edge. I'm not going to lie. So we love to do fundraisers, and especially we like to do weird ones. Like, we think that the stranger the thing that comes our way, the better. We had someone do a Pokemon art fundraiser for us a couple years ago, which was phenomenal. we're yes people. If somebody has something that's age appropriate and legal, we are into doing it.
So there's your two questions. There's the other two questions.
That's all we need.
Very nice. So, you know, if somebody has an idea that they want to go, we are like, we're pretty much going to be like, yes, let's make it happen. How can we make that work? And so we were approached by this organization and we thought, that would be super fun. Let's do it.
Yeah. Right on. Right on.
So that will be coming up in August this year. Right and we're really trying to, like, focus on that a little bit.
Nice.
And then we do tend to travel around the country. We do presentations at a lot of the abilities expos that take place around the nation.
Okay.
We often do talks around the country. If anybody's ever interested in having us come in to do a presentation about, if it's coming into their business, we're happy to come in and talk about having a service dog in your workplace and what that looks like and what you as a business are required to offer as far as accommodations and what you are not. We're happy to go into schools to do more of a general presentation about service dogs, how they work, what they do for kids, Lions groups, anything like that. We're really happy to come in and do those types of demos. So if anyone is interested in setting something like that up, please contact us. We'd be happy to come in and do something like that
right
for you.
On.
And normally we have, when we do these presentations, we do have either your person will be a volunteer who has a working service dog partner, so they will bring their service dog partner, or it'll be one of our volunteers who has a demo dog who will be able to come in with a demonstration service dog who is trained in many different skills, and they can kind of demonstrate the different ways that the dogs are able to assist somebody.
That's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, that would definitely be helpful, especially, I mean, I'm just thinking because, you know, we are in government, and I'm just curious how many agencies really have the ability to know what that looks like if someone is to bring a dog, is if they even know themselves of, like, what questions they can ask and can't ask. And,
and we really try to help. We really try to be here for both sides, as far as we've certainly had businesses that contacted us and said, you know, we're having a problem. What do we do?
Yeah.
We don't know how to handle this. We know that we're not allowed to ask them to leave, but this is becoming an issue for us. So how do we handle this? And so we try to make sure that everybody is aware of what the laws are surrounding it, so that everybody knows what they can and cannot do.
Yeah.
And we try to support both sides such that everyone is following the laws that have already been set.
Yeah.
So we really try to be here as sort of a neutral party that's just coming in and saying, you know, this is how this works, and here's what we can do, and here's what you can't do, and this is how it needs to look, to make sure that everybody is on the right path as far as we're using these partnerships and how these tools go.
Right on. Well, Mallory, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about Canines for Disabled Dogs, or Canines for Disabled Kids. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, no problem. I really appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you.
Alright, that was Mallory with Canines for Disabled Kids. She is very energetic and awesome.
Yes, it was a great interview with Mallory. I really appreciate her coming in and and teaching, kind of what we talked about at the beginning of the pod, is what I thought they did was helped help directly with providing a service animal.
Yeah.
And immediately realized, like, they are such a large advocate for families and kids under the age of 18 that need assistance in finding what service animal is a right fit for them. Yeah. And I think that's so admirable, because I didn't, like, you know, we've talked to so many different animal nonprofits that specifically help in service dogs.
Yeah.
That I felt really comfortable understanding, like, what they were doing. But I didn't understand, like, oh, wow, as a parent, you probably don't have the time in your area to, like, know all of the locations that you can get a dog.
Yeah.
Also, like, maybe this dog isn't going to be coming from your own state. And, mm-hmm. like, so it was a really cool aspect to learn about service animals that I didn't realize that was even out there.
Yeah.
Was essentially this hub that people can go to and be like, I need this, this, and this for my kid. Or I need this, this, and this, yeah. for me, for my own independence.
Yeah.
And they can narrow that list down from 150 to, like, 10.
Yeah.
And I think that's a... It's something that's like, of course it's out there. It's a directory. But at the same time, it's like, but these are all such specific nonprofits that to be able to have them all into one bucket can really assist families when they need the most help.
Yeah. And then Mallory did say two things about that. Whereas, like, people feel rejected if they're told, no, we can't help you.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, you're going to stop searching if you're told no. Some people, like, they'll keep going, they'll keep fighting, they'll keep doing research, they'll keep at it. But a lot of people are just like, well, I guess this doesn't work for me, so yeah. it's a no. But also, if you're somebody who has anything that's different, if you're differently abled in any way, whether it's mentally or physically, and you're told, we can't help you until you're 18.
Yeah.
Like, that is a quality of life that has to change. Right. So it's great that they're there to provide right. services for kids.
Yeah, I think it's great that that's how they founded themselves, yeah. is really from the beginning, is noticing that these children need to have this animal to create that independence that they can have with their mm-hmm. peers, to create the responsibility that they can have with their peers, to really help them grow. She spoke directly about that story about the young woman who was becoming more and more isolated, and people started yeah. talking to her aide more than directly to her.
Yeah.
And then once she received the service animal, it really gave her an opportunity to come back out and to no longer in a way worry her parents of you know, what's happening to our daughter. And now she can go out and be about, and I think what an incredible experience
yeah,
for
it's
herself.
Empowering, yeah.
It's empowering, and it shows independence, and independence in a way that, like, we all want and we all expect to have. And for somebody to maybe have a disability, as she spoke again about the 16-year-old boy who finally was able to take a shower on his mm-hmm. own because yeah. he had the ability to doing it with his dog and not his mom. I think about that as a 16-year-old. I mean, I can only imagine myself, if my parents were like, oh, let me assist you, mm-hmm. I'd be like, I don't, why are you here, you yeah. know? And to be able to live your life now finally like your peers, I think is an incredible, you know, feat for that person.
Yeah.
Understanding so.
Yeah. So then as far as, like, considering getting a service dog for either yourself or your child, you have to take on some questions and look at some of these kind of things a little more seriously. Like, something that I don't think people think about when they get a pet in general is, like, am I financially able to take on the costs of caring for a dog, specifically a dog, even a cat, for 10 to 15 years?
Right.
They live about that long, you know? So, like, can you financially do that? For a service animal, the costs are a little more than they would be for your just general pet, or if your pet has a need, like, my mom has a cat that has to have special food
mm-hmm.
in order to, you know, function. So it's like, you have to have the ability to pay for that. Are you prepared to care or arrange for care every single day for a dog? You got to think about that. If you're going out of the job, you have to have, what, doggy daycare? Mm-hmm. Something like that. And then something, too, like with that girl who kind of came out of her shell after getting a service dog, are you prepared to be the center of attention? People may come at you and be like, oh, your dog, let me touch your dog, let me ask you questions about your dog, because dogs are, you know, awesome and great.
Yeah.
Are you willing and able to accept training and socialization obligations accompanying a service dog? And are you prepared to deal with conflict? Some people may be like, you don't belong in this place because we don't allow animals, mm-hmm. even though service dogs are
legal.
Allowed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking up something, too, about the American Humane Association did 7 years of research in controlled clinical trials, and they were doing animal-assisted therapy measures. So they had this report called Canines and Childhood Cancer, and it was examining effects of therapy dogs with patients and families. So they talked about potential benefits of having service dogs, and they included things like increasing motivation to, like, actively participate in the healing process for cancer patients. Parents do this thing sometimes where they underestimate the needs of the healthy child because they're not the focus at the moment, of course.
Oh, yeah.
So a service dog helps with both the healthy child and the child who's sick. And then animals are just non-judgmental and kind of unconditionally devoted to help people feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've seen that when we've talked about it before with courthouse dogs.
Yeah.
These therapy dogs, essentially, that can create this sense of being of support and safety.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting, too, of, like, when she was talking about all these new types of, I'm going to call them bio dogs.
I know, bio dogs is great.
Because I think that's an awesome name.
Yeah, I think that's
I feel
a
like
great
someone
band name.
Really needs to, like, I don't know, make some cartoon or something that's like bio dogs.
And they're all like superhero dogs.
It's like essentially like 24, but with dogs. Yeah. And
24.
Each of the dogs saved the day because like one of the incredible stories, I would have never thought that they would allow a dog in a, and you gotta, I hope you listen to this podcast. You could actually take a dog into a surgery because they believe the dog could predict in case this person had an issue during surgery.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we think of like these search, like just
search dogs. Yeah. They kind of have the same thing.
Yeah.
But
it's just,
in a different
it's
capacity.
Really interesting to me that like they, medical teams are realizing just so important about how these dogs can really affect human life that they're willing to bring them into the hospital.
Yeah.
They are like your, you know, they're essentially your own nurse in a way, like leading up, they're your caretaker as well. And I just think it's incredible about how these dogs can, whether it's a smell or something else, that they can indicate a change in someone's body. I mean, they're truly like
bio dogs,
a man's best friend kind of thing.
A doctor's best tool. Yes, exactly. So we're going to be releasing bio dogs in the style of 24 at some point in the near future, I'm sure. Yeah, we're gonna work on that.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
So upcoming events. Let's talk about upcoming events quick. You want to talk about Giving Tuesday?
Yep. Giving Tuesday will be similar to the past year. We're going to be doing Giving Grams. This year, we are going to keep it simple. It is just going to be so you can just send a gram to your coworker. It's not going to be anonymous. We are going to be able to, so you can say, hey, Susan, it's me, Karen. I think you're doing a great job, and here's a funny Giving Tuesday gram. It will be $2, again, just like last year, just to send these e-grams. The proceeds do go to the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and this is just a really great ability to show your coworkers or someone else that you care.
Nice. And then we are in the midst of the campaign. It's mid-November, so we are getting close to wrapping it up. Local coordinators, for any fundraisers that you're having, just remember, get those in to your campaign leader sooner rather than later so they can wrap up everything for the last week to give. The last week to give is December 2nd through 6th, with that last day, the 6th, being when we'd like all of our fundraisers to really get wrapped up for the year so we can send them out to all the charities that you guys work so hard for to get all these donations out to. But yeah, we are wrapping up another campaign real quick here. So, service dogs, children, and animals. That's what we got for you today. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful episode of Podcast for Good.
Bye.